Hi, Jasmine Belcher-Morris from StoryCorps here. I want to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts, the TED Radio Hour. I promise every time you listen, you'll learn something. And you'll hear from people with great ideas, including StoryCorps founder Dave Isay, this year's TED Prize winner. Find the TED Radio Hour podcast at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
This is the StoryCorps podcast. I'm Michael Garofalo. In this episode, we'll be listening to stories of escape. Now, some of these were great escapes. Others were not so great.
I ran away about once a week. And they'd always find me on a school ground playing basketball, or I'd come home after dark and my mom always left the back door open.
That's Bud Norton. He grew up in Kansas during the 1940s, and he came to a StoryCorps mobile booth with his nephew. Now, the thing about Bud is that even though he had a lot of experience running away, he just wasn't very good at it.
There was four of us, Dennis Green and Jimmy Brown and Jack Draves and I. We ran away. We was going to go to California. We caught a freight. The train stopped, and we thought we were somewhere like Colorado or somewhere halfway there. And we sent Jimmy Brown, because he was the craftiest of the group, down to the store, and we took up a collection, and we told him, buy something and, you know, just stick a couple cans of something in your pocket. Well, he came back. He had three or four cans of dog food, a loaf of bread, and a jar of mayonnaise that must have been about a foot and a half tall. Jack threatened to kill him. And then when we found out we was only in Lawrence, we called Jack's brother to come and get us. One time, I had a whipping coming when my dad got home, and I worried about it all day, so I decided to run away. And I'd seen pictures of hobos, you know, with a stick and a little handkerchief tied on it. So I decided I was going to put everything I owned in this blanket. I had my Sunday suit, brand new ball glove, and my shoes. My dad had just bought me some spikes because I was playing in the All-Star game the week later. And I couldn't find a stick, so I sawed off my mom's broom handle. We lived about a half a block from the trains down there. And went down, and I threw it on this open boxcar. And then it gained speed, and I couldn't catch it. And I saw all my belongings going down the tracks. And I just stood there and cried and threw rocks at it. I went home, and I told my mom. And the guy next door was a railroad man, and he checked the train. And that was it. It was all gone. I went to Sunday school in tennis shoes with tape around the toes, and that's what I played the ball game in, and great experience.
I bet your dad was real happy with you.
He was thrilled.
That's Bud Norton with his nephew Tim Locher in Kansas City, Missouri. This next story is also about running away. But when Roberto Olivero was growing up in L.A. during the 1960s, the stakes for him were much, much higher.
My stepfather was a cruel man to my mother, my sister and I, and everyone in the family.
The beatings, humiliations, I remember them every day. But my mother was a long-suffering, beautiful woman. She was tall, and she had radiant, light brown eyes. She made sure I read. She made sure I wrote. As I got older, my stepfather and I were continually at odds. And I found my refuge in school. I remember the counselor at the school called me in one day and said, there's a program at the University of Santa Barbara that will place you there for a summer in preparation for the university. And I said, there's no way I can do that. My stepfather will never let me leave home. But the counselor, he was persistent. Then the director of that program showed up and asked to speak to my father. It was not a very pleasant discussion. My stepfather, he said, no way. He's not going anywhere. And then when I had been officially admitted at the university, I went to bed that night. I used to sleep on a cot in the kitchen. It was about 12 o'clock at night. And in the quiet, I could hear the match, and my mom lit a cigarette. She was sitting in the kitchen in her bathrobe. She didn't turn the light on, and she said, I've packed the suitcase. It's in the garage. Next Saturday,
leave, and do not look back. Go. So I left. And, you know, I could never go back. The hostility was unbelievable. I don't think I saw anyone in the family for maybe 2 years. But I thought of her constantly. I left her with that cruel man. The guilt with that still bothers me today. But if you could have seen her smile when I graduated, she whispered to me when I came down from the stage, "The applause for you was louder than for anybody in the room." And I can look back today and I know she believed I had a place on the other side. Where would I be if it wasn't for her?
That's Roberto Oliveira at StoryCorps in Los Angeles, California. He spoke with his wife, Deborah. His stepfather and his mother eventually separated. Both have since passed away. When I first moved to New York about 15 years ago, someone said to me that you can't call yourself a real New Yorker until you've been mugged. Well, this next story comes from someone who earned that title, but somehow New Yorker, even with its connotations of street smarts and toughness, New Yorker doesn't feel like enough. It's like we need to invent a new word to describe this guy, Julio Diaz. In 2009, Julio was working as a social worker in Manhattan. And each day after work, he'd take the subway home to the Bronx. When he got off the train, he'd head to a nearby diner, always the same one, to have dinner. But one night, as he stepped onto a nearly empty platform, his otherwise routine evening took an unexpected turn.
So I get off the train, you know, I'm walking towards the stairs, and this young teenager pulls out a knife. He wants my money. So I just gave him my wallet and told him, "Here you go." He starts to leave, and as he's walking away, I'm like, "Hey, wait a minute, you forgot something. If you're going to be robbing people for the rest of the night, you might as well take my coat to keep you warm." So, you know, he's looking at me like, "What's going on here, you know?" And he asks me, "Well, why are you doing this?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know, man. If you're willing to risk your freedom for a few dollars, then I guess you must really need the money. I mean, all I wanted to do was go get dinner. And if you really want to join me, hey, you're more than welcome." So I'm like, "Look, you can follow me if you want." You know, I just felt maybe he really needs help. So, you know, we go into the diner where I normally eat. We sit down in the booth and the manager comes by, the dishwashers come by, the waiters come by to say hi, you know. So the kid was like, "Man, but you know everybody here. Do you own this place?" I'm like, "No, I just eat here a lot." He's like, "But you're even nice to the dishwasher." I'm like, "Well, haven't you been taught you should be nice to everybody?" So he's like, "Yeah, but I didn't think people actually behave that way." So I just asked him in the end, I'm like, "You know, what is it that you want out of life?" He just had almost a sad face. Either he couldn't answer me or he didn't want to. The bill came and I look at him and I'm like, "Look, I guess you're going to have to pay for this bill because you have my money and I can't pay for this. So if you give me my wallet back, I'll gladly treat you." He didn't even think about it. He's like, "Yeah, okay, here you go." So I got my wallet back and I gave him $20 for, you know, I figure, maybe it'll help him, I don't know. And when I gave him the $20, I asked him to give me something in return, which was his knife. And he gave it to me. You know, it's funny because when I told my mom about what happened, you know, no mom wants to hear this, but with her, she was like, "Well, you know, you're the type of kid that always someone asked you for the time. You gave them your watch." I don't know, I figure, you know, you treat people right, you can only hope that they treat you right. It's as simple as it gets in this complicated world.
That's Julio Diaz in New York City. This next story, which is our last one, is set in a small farming community in Southern California. It's where Ramon Chunky Sanchez grew up. It was the 1950s, and for Mexican-American kids like him, there was this thing that happened when you went to school, and it seemed totally inescapable. the teachers changed your name.
My name, when I started kindergarten, was Ramon. And by the time I was in the second grade, everybody was calling me Raymond. You know, out in the playground, in the classroom, Raymond, hey, Raymond, hey, Raymond. And trying to adjust to this, you know what I mean? And if there was a girl named Maria, her name became Mary. And Juanita became Jane. Till one day, we got a new student by the name of Facundo Gonzalez. Facundo Gonzalez, man. When he came into school, we noticed they called an emergency administrative meeting. You'd kind of hear him talking through the door. You know, what are we going to do with this guy, man? You know what I mean? How are we going to change his name, you know? And one teacher goes, well, you know what? Why don't we try to shorten the name a little bit? And they go, yeah, well, but how do you spell it? F-A-C-U-N-D-O. And they go, why don't we just spell it F-A-C? And one of the teachers goes, well, that doesn't mean his name would be Fock. And the other teachers looked at him, no, that, you know, that sounds too much like that, like a dirty word. You know, you can't be saying Fock. Where's your homework, you know? Where's Fock at, you know what I mean? Well, that was a trip we always remembered going to elementary school because Facundo was the only guy who never got his name changed.
That's Ramon Chunky Sanchez in San Diego. There's an animated version of his story called Facundo the Great. It's on our website, storycorps.org. And while you're there, you can read about a new project we just announced this week. It's called The Great Thanksgiving Lesson. Here's the idea. This Thanksgiving, we want to try to preserve the voices of an entire generation in one weekend. I know, it's a typically grandiose StoryCorps-type goal, but I think we can do it with your help. See, what we're doing is we're working with teachers and high school students across the country on this national homework assignment to go out over the holiday and interview an older family member. But it doesn't just have to be teachers and high school students. Anybody can do this. All you need is a smartphone and the StoryCorps app. Find out more about it, and if you're a teacher, there's more information if you want to do this homework assignment in your class at storycorps.org. Until next time, for the StoryCorps podcast, I'm Michael Garofalo. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Jasmine Belcher Morris again, reminding you to check out the TED Radio Hour podcast at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.